Blog Talk Radio.
Power. take my hand.
Welcome to Dry Bones Connection on Thursday night. My guest tonight is Vincent Barry, and we're honoring once again Norman Woodfill and Miss Kim Weston. This is part two of this conversation, and we will be back with you in a couple of moments. Thank you. Thank you.
walk with me. Take my hand.
Like we're back, and I have my guest with us. I hope that he's ready. Okay. Vincent, hello. Welcome to part two.
I am here. Do I hear you? Do you hear me?
Yes, I do. You're loud and clear.
Thank you. I'm having trouble here with my Wi-Fi out here. I'm way out in Ypsilanti right now.
I understand. It's fuzzy. My feedback, what I can hear is not too clear. It's bubbly-like. But we're going to press through.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay,
welcome
great.
Back. We're happy to have you back tonight with us. And we have Miss Kim with us. She's not on the line yet, but when she's ready, she'll let me know. So
okay.
How are you this evening?
Say it again.
How are you?
I'm very good. I was in rehearsal. I just got out of rehearsal right now with for our show and what my band is doing, and we just got through doing a bunch of Norman cuts.
Oh, good, great.
Mm-hmm.
That is great.
Yeah.
So now you had tell me some things on your son, but unfortunately I'm not able to play them. Your son has a beautiful voice. He's absolutely magnificent.
Well,
and
you know,
his
I appreciate. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying this with his you know, just how he just mixed everything together is truly, truly, it's a piece of art. It's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, and it's really good. And, you know, the young man that you sent me yesterday, 14, is awesome.
Oh, wasn't he? He truly, truly was. I knew him
awesome.
Because I would love to have him on the show, but I don't know him. But his voice was just truly outstanding.
I mentioned that because I thought you did know him.
I wish I did.
You know what I was looking at?
I said, wow.
I was like, she's throwing me some hints. Maybe I'll find that 12 or 14-year-old that can come in and do what my son did on these records. You know what I mean?
Yes. That would truly be something. We have to see if we can't find him.
Right. But who all we got on the call today?
Well, we have folks that are here. I do see Miss Kim is here and Brother Ray is here and others are here, but I don't know who they are. But, you know, we do have Miss Kim and Brother Ray.
How you doing,
them.
Brother Ray?
He hasn't put his hand up yet. I don't know. Brother Ray, you know the protocol. If you're ready, and Miss Kim, if y'all are ready, you know, just press 1 and I'll let you. Okay. There's Brother Ray.
Hello, Miss Kim. Hello, Miss Kim, with love. You know that.
Yes, Brother Ray.
Yes. Hey, Brother Benny, how are you?
I'm doing good, my brother. How about yourself?
I'm alive and well. Thank God for that. Yes, sir.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
It's up there in cold weather right now, huh?
Yep. I don't know if any of my people are going, but I invited my partners online. You guys met Adina the other day, and Eddie, Dean and Eddie, I think they were supposed to get on. But I also have a friend of mine, Sheila Finn, who's working with me on the show. Sheila Finn and Adina, who actually put the shows together with me, and for what we're doing on Sunday. And I also asked my guest host of the evening that night, Mr. Spider Turner, to join us. I don't know if he got on yet either, because he's a talented, he knows Miss Kim as well. And you know, but I don't know, you know, I don't know if they're having trouble. I know I had a lot of trouble getting in, but I'm way out in the woods though too. So, you know, I'm glad you called me, Antoinette, and got me on the line, because I was having trouble. The Wi-Fi kept going out and all this, it kept telling no connection and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah. Just let them know that if they need for me to call them from the studio, they just send me their number and I will call them in from the studio. But those that are here, if you are one of the ones that he named, are, you know, just press the number 1 and I will let you in. You're working on something for Sunday. What is it that you're working on?
Well, Sunday is the show for Dream Boy, Norman, and me. And when I'm honoring Norman and Miss Kim that day, and we got a lot of people that's going to be in the house, and some Motown people, and I'm sharing with everybody about my book and my documentary and my story, and we're doing a theatrical production as well. And it's all about uplifting Norman. Yeah, it's all about uplifting Norman, and then I got with Kim, and we had a bond there, and I was like, I got to uplift Kim and her program that she did for these young guys during when we were young kids. I didn't get that upbringing that these guys in Detroit got to be with Kim and the Stevies and all the people, I think it's Earl Van Dyke and all the people that Kim helped mentor through their programs, and it just so happened, well, one of the guys that was in her program is my best friend, Jeff Stanton, and I got my start with his band Dream Boy, and so we're all putting together our stuff for the event on Sunday, and I'm uplifting Dream Boy and Norman and Me is the name of my book. So I'm talking about my whole journey and how it all started for me from a baby all the way to being 10 years old at the watch stack, seeing Miss Kim and didn't know who I was looking at, but just knew that I was. It was some historical stuff in there. So, and then I came back to Michigan, and when I got with high school, I get to Detroit, and not even 6 months after I get there, my guys that I got with signs with Quincy Jones. So it's like it just went right into one thing. Your God just blessed us all, you know, and it started a trend. So that got me to L.A. and all that kind of stuff. And then I met Norman when I got there, and then I did my own thing and started rising up the charts myself, doing some things on my own. So and one of them was, I didn't know Spider at the time, but one of my rappers, I took a different turn than other guys. Everybody else was doing R&B, and I started getting into rap. And the only reason I got into rap is because I had a young cousin. His name was Lord G, L-O-R-D-G, and he's from Detroit. Mm-hmm. He came out to Detroit one time. I think I might have said this earlier, didn't I? You know, I'm trying to sum it up because this is part two, and I'm trying to go into how the story goes from one end to the next. And and Lord G came from Detroit, came to see his cousin. He said, "Hey, cuz, I need you to take me to go see my friend." And I took him over to see his best friend. His best friend's father was Spider Turner, who I was trying to put on the line here. And if everybody knows who Spider Turner is, Spider Turner is had a hit record in 1967, which was a remake of Stand By Me. But it was a very unique remake because it was more of a version where he did other singers in it. He imitated other singers like Eddie Kendricks and David Ruffin and Chuck Jackson. I mean, he made it his own, and it was a hit with him as well. I got a chance to meet Spider. I got a chance to meet Spider in that setting. And Spider, I didn't know it at the time, but I think I might have said it earlier. Norman comes walking out the room. And that's how I met Norman Whitfield, was through Spider Turner.
Oh, okay.
And, through that whole union there. Now, my rapper, Lord G, we got him through a guy from Detroit also, from a guy from Detroit also named Tony Green, T-Money Green, the bass player for the Dramatics. We were all friends, and he was working with Dr. Dre and those guys up there. And he got with Lord G, and next thing I know, here we are. He got Lord G working with Dr. Dre, and we did Above the Rim soundtrack with Dr. Dre and those guys over at Def Row Records. And that's how I got in the mix of that's how I got in the mix with doing rap music. Ended up managing that. I learned my management skills from two gentlemen out of Detroit named Virgil Taylor and Carl Taylor, his brother. And they managed Dream Boy. So that was my start. So I was working a lot for them, and I didn't know a lot about management. But when I got to California, here come my little cousin wanting to do some rap. So he trusted me, and I was working for MCA Records at the time as well. So I was doing a lot of things, so I decided to manage him. And he the one that got the Spider and ended up getting me to Norman, and then the rest is history. I mean, and I got to say, Tommy Hearns' younger brother, Billy Hearns, he brought him to California and took care of the guy, Lord G, while we were out there, and then became good friends with me. And if it wasn't for that union, we probably wouldn't have did the Above the Rim stuff and all the different things, because Billy really, really came in at a great time, and I got to uplift him for bringing us together like that. And okay, hey, I'm on an interview, bro. Y'all can go ahead, but I'm on an interview. I'm talking to people in the background. It's okay. But I'm trying to get it so I won't be long-winded tonight and get the story where it needs to go. So, you know, because I get so excited, and I'm so happy to be here right now because of Miss Kim got me on this line, and I'm loving it. I'm like a little kid in a candy store, just so you know. just like when I met Norman, I was a little kid in a candy store, man, you know, and not getting that experience. not getting that experience that Kim gave Jeff and those guys. Oh, Kim, I got to tell you, there's another guy here that you probably don't remember, but I know you know him. He used to come with Jeff all the time. His name is Jimmy Hunt. And he used to box, we used to call him. And he came in from Vegas. He's a part of the group Dream Boy. And he came in today for the show. And he was used to, he came up there all the time with Jeff and was playing in, what was the band, box? Little Buddy Love and the Crayons. That was something that they was doing. And see, those guys got all that love and experience that I never seen coming from Bay City. So it was a pleasure. So when I got to L.A. with my rapper, like I said, and I met Norman, that took me back because Norman was always a favorite of mine already. And Rolls Royce was my favorite band. And you know, I always followed Norman. So here I am in this, here I am in this house with Norman and Spider. Spiders, my mother and them, they loved it so much. As a kid, I knew that song, you know. And there's a story behind all that, which we're going to get into tonight. But that's how I met these cats.
Yeah, wait a minute, Vincent, before you tell your story. Wait a minute, before you tell your story, we have Miss Kim Weston. Miss Kim? Miss Kim? Okay, she had her hand up. Did you have yourself on mute?
It was muted. Blessings, everybody. Of course I remember Buddy Love. Go ahead with the story.
You remember Buddy Love and the Crayons?
I remember Buddy Love.
Yes. I just let her know that Box was here. Yeah. So anyway, that was the Dream Boy guys in the background. They're going to get us some food right now. I told them I handle it. It's cool. But they can't wait to see Kim. He can't wait to see Kim too either. You know. So it was all good. So, like I was saying, these guys got all that experience as a youngster. I didn't get that experience. I wish I would have gotten that experience, but it came back for me. Like I said, I got the experience and watched back to 10, got the bite then, and then later on in my life, I ended up meeting Norman Whitfield. It was like a dream come true, and I felt like I was working for Motown. You know, and that was the gist of how I got there, what I just told you guys, told everybody how I got to Norman. And then the rest is history. And then we worked with Dr. Dre. I was so proud to even introduce him to Dr. Dre because Norman always wanted to follow the rappers and see what they was doing. And why are they doing all this crazy stuff? So he wanted, next thing you know it, and that's why I wanted to play Masterpiece tonight, but we can't get it up. I'm going to give it to you later because he used my rapper, Lord G, on his song because he loved Lord G. Norman ended up loving that guy. And we just, through Spider and then we all just became a happy little family, you know what I mean? And out in L.A. And, you know, I was doing my own thing as well, writing songs and different things like that. And I had a record that I put together on a couple of people, and one of them went to number one. And it's called Don't Walk Away by the group Jade. And that was something I actually didn't do that production that you hear out there, but I was involved in the early stages of it, and I had to it wasn't a pretty sight, but it's okay now, but I had to kind of, you know, go after my records, you know, kind of say, so to speak. And that's how Norman ended up coming in saying, and I said it the other day, he saved my life because the case was a huge case. And I ended up having to settle out of it. And, you know, it became a good thing with all the people involved, not nothing bad. But Norman knew, he knew something I didn't. And he said, look, son, let me pull you to the side and tell you what's going on so you can get yourself right so you won't get listed out there. So you won't get blacklisted out there like I did. He said, you don't make the kind of money I do. I made a lot of money. You ain't made none of that kind of money. So you could tear your own self up. And so those were the kind of lessons that this man gave me. You know, and pull my coattail and told me to calm down and just relax and say have thick skin and you'll be all right. and don't burn no bridges. You know what I mean? So that's what I did.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and shout out to the guy. His name is Vassal Bifford. Vassal Bifford Jr., called him DJ in Detroit. He made that record hot. It was so smoking. And it was like a giant record, Warner Brothers Records, one of their first R&B number one records that they had. And then I didn't know what I was doing. I was young, but no. And that, like I said, Norman pulled me to the side and said, "Man, you need to back off and settle that up." You know what I mean? And I did. You know, and the record went on and did 20 weeks on the charts. And they made sure, LaSalle and everybody, they made sure I got a little money. I just went on and did what I had to do. And I just, I admire that. And I want to shout out to all those guys who was involved, because it wasn't nothing. I wasn't in bad noise. I was just curious to why, you know, my record got out. My song got in the hands of somebody, and then it got twisted up. And everybody was doing, I mean, brought me in and said, "Look, you need to sit down. You need to, hey, that's the only record you did, you know, but how can you prove it? You know, blah, 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 blah." I had proof and all that stuff, but he was like, "That ain't the deal. You got to understand there's a machine behind when people make number one records. There's a machine behind that. You got all these different people that's a part of that record making it go the way it's going. So you got to be careful, son." And he said, "See, you got to be real, because you can't be going out there running your mouth, blah, 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 blah." He said, "Hey, this is what I suggest you do." And so I went on and went to my lawyer and said, "Look, man, my son is about to be born." I said, "Look, I have no grief." I didn't even know the man, because he was the biggest, the producer out of everybody in the, that was in that whole situation. I didn't even know the man. Never laid eyes on him. But because of one of his writers and I were friends, and we was doing the record prior to what they did, it got out, and, you know, I had a musicology on it, and it added up to, like, okay, you had the first copyright, that kind of thing. And it was getting real strange, you know. So I backed off of it, and my lawyer said, "Hey, we're going to settle it. You know, were you willing to do this?" I said, "Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm willing to do it, you know, because I don't want no trouble." You know, and the man, he was the biggest name out of all of us, and the man never, ever laid eyes on me. And I know he was, we finally met and kicked it, and it's so crazy, man. You guys probably think I'm crazy when I talk like I'm getting ready to talk, but all of a sudden, my uncle, who works for Philip Morris in Michigan, when he heard the name of Sal Benford Jr., he said, "Vinny, do you know who that is?" I don't know. I never met the guy. He said, "Yeah, but you met his daddy, Vassal Bifford Jr." He said, I worked with them when I was the head of Philip Morris, USA, in Southfield. I gave his dad a temp agency situation where they hired black employees to work for Philip Morris. He said, "This is just crazy." "It is crazy." I said, "I don't even know the guy." I said, "Matter of fact, I never said that he did anything to me. I said that I was working with one of the rockers that was on that song, and that's who I was dealing with. I never laid eyes on the producer of the sound. But I tell you this, if it wasn't for that production and what he did, made that record hot, it probably wouldn't have get that day, because it was hot. It's called Don't Walk Away. You could probably pull it up and play it right now, you know, and it was hot, you know, on the charts for 20 weeks. Yes, I was proud of what happened, but I wasn't proud about how I had to go by to get in the loop, and I didn't know. I was totally green, and that's what Norman came in and taught me the ropes. He said, "I'm going to teach you something, this young man." He said, "Because I like you." And so I'm saying all these things because there's a lot in my book. Everybody tells me, "Vinny, you're talking too much. You're telling too much." No, I ain't telling enough, but I can't do it in an hour. I can't do it. I'm a talker. I like to communicate, and I'm very passionate about it, and I'm so happy about I may not have the early experience that Jeff and Box and all those guys got working with Kim. I'm talking about there's a host of people that work with Kim. Matter of fact, Kim, me and Jeff talked to Sudiani yesterday, the percussion player. You know, Sudiani. who also was part of the program with Kim Weston's festival. And I might not have gotten an early thing, but I might not have gotten it early, but I got it late. So I feel like from Norman Whitfield and Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops working on this project, I felt like I was just in the same league with Jeff and Box and them, working with legends like Kim, you know, and I was working with legends like Norman. And,
absolutely,
and,
darling. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And Mickey, I met Mickey through Norman, Kim's ex-husband. Man, I mean, you know, he's the A&R man. I used to want to be an A&R man. He's the greatest A&R man in the business. When I got to meet that guy, I was in the candy store again, you know?
And, wow.
What Kim did for me yesterday, oh, my God. Talking to Paul Reiser, my God. Norman used to talk about that, man. Here I am. I talked to him before.
One of the original punk brothers.
Oh yes, I mean, come on. I mean, and I met Jack Acid, another original Funk Brothers out in L.A. with Norman. So I was in seven. I'm in heaven now, just talking about it. You know. So I got
yeah.
a lot to say. I got a lot to say, and so I'm not telling all my book. I'm not even telling the surface of it. I'm just telling you my excitement and my passion, and what the book is all
yeah.
about. That's what I'm doing right now. You know.
Okay, well,
and,
tell us more about Dr. Dre. You said you met Dr. Dre and you worked with him.
Well, I personally didn't work with Dr. Dre. I was the manager of Lord G, the rapper from Detroit. Tony Green and Butch Smalls, the people, and Ricky Rouse, the guitar player from Detroit, they were working with Dr. Dre through Tony Green. Everybody came to Death Row through Tony Green, T-Money Green. And matter of fact, I got to shout to Tony again because Tony is the one that kind of patched up that relationship between Vassal Benford and myself because he was real tight with him. And I really wanted to talk to Vassal through that. So by us working with Lord G at Death Row Records with Dr. Dre, it gave us a whole another outlook and gave us some reason to do some certain things. So Tony was telling me, man, you need to fix that. You know, the sound, you know, he don't know the truth. He don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, man, just hook us up and let's put together. So Tony got us in the room and me and Vassal was able to shake hands and say, hey, man, it's good, blah, 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 blah. And we on to the next thing. But working with Dr. Dre, yeah. I used to sit in the room with Tony and Lord G while they was doing certain things. We'd go to Dre's house at one time. We didn't go all the time, but a couple of times we'd go to his house. And I watched him work with Lord G, and it was just amazing what he thought of Lord G. But we never got to the next base because Dr. Dre left. And he went away. He left the label in 96. That's when G didn't want to be there no more because all the crazy shit started happening. And we were saved because God was in our corner. You know, I had a rap name, what? Lord G, L-O-R-D-G. He was going to be one of the first conscious rappers for Death Row Records, street conscious rappers from Detroit, Michigan. But what Tupac was really about, they forgot about everybody. You know, Tupac was just,
yeah.
you know, so Suge wasn't paying no attention to us at that time. He had who he wanted. So we left, but here's how I got Eminem to Dr. Dre. The Bass brothers from Dream Boy, Jeff and Mark Bass, they knew that I worked with Dr. Dre. My rapper had worked with him Above the Rim soundtrack. And they knew that, so they came to L.A. and said, hey, man, they met with me and Lord G. They said, hey, guys think you can get us to Dr. Dre? And, of course, this is my boys from home, from Detroit. Yes, I can try. You know, I'm definitely going to give them my all. You know, handshake deal. No, give me some money. No, you know, everybody got the old, blah, 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 blah. You should have did this. No, those are my boys. I didn't feel like that. I wasn't trying to get in the way. So I did that, but we never got to Dre at that time. But then the opportunity came to where I was able to give Dr. Dre Eminem CD at the time. And that was because when he left and went to Aftermath and started his own company, he called one of the people that we knew us and said, "Hey, I'm looking for Lord G. You think you can find Lord G? I want him to come guest write for me. Ghost write for me." Because he really liked, just like Norman said, "Hey, man, your guy Lord G is the bomb. He's a great writer, a great producer, and he has great vocabulary and definitely a smart kid. His words is put together than everybody. He's really, really that good." He said, you watch that kid, Benny. He's going to be a star. And if he's working with Dr. Dre, let him go with the he who has the goal has to say so. He said, if you want to be with the best, Norman said, just like I wanted to be with the best, I hounded Barry Gordy to the day that he finally said, come on in, Norman, and I started working with Mickey. He said, Mickey took me over there and said, I hounded him every day. And I think Martha Reeves and Janie Bradford was secretaries at that time there. Norman was said, I banged on their door every day. Persistence paid off. He said, so don't you keep being who you are, Vinny. And he said, if you get a record out there and you get a record on the radio with Lord G, I'm going to back you guys with your first record and your first album. And I end up doing it with Above the Rim soundtrack. You know, by him being on that, which was a big soundtrack, even to this day. You know, they're doing anniversaries and all that kind of different things. So this is the experience that I got out there managing my group and working in L.A., and I happened to get some of that experience because of Tony and them guys over at Death Row. They didn't even know I was the manager at first. I wasn't this guy you hear right now because, you know, you had to be careful. I'm a very aggressive guy. And I had to be careful over there because, you know, it was crazy, you know. And so you never knew what was going to happen. As a matter of fact, when we went up to have a meeting, Norman hired a bodyguard for me to go up there. He said, I can't let you go up there by yourself, you know. And we went to see Dick Griffey at the time. He was really hands-on over there at the time. And we went to see Dick Griffey, and he gave us pointers. I mean, Norman put me with the best people. To get advice, to do different things, and it's just he just mentioned me and watched over me through that whole Death Row thing. Funny story on this: we all went to a club one day for Lord G when he was on Death Row Records, and he never did get the sign there. We end up leaving before we could actually get everything going, but he was over there while we were doing Above the Rim, so we did a show. And, man, so all hell broke out. People were shooting everything, and Norman was there. Norman and my uncle, boy, they was diving over bars. Woo! So they were, oh, man, we got to get out of here. I mean, it was crazy. And so then after we got through, Norman was so mad. He was like, Vinny, if I didn't love you, boy, we didn't go through no stuff like that, Benny. I almost lost my life up in here, man. Do you know who I am? He was going off. It was crazy, man. He said, I ain't never going up there no more. Yeah, he didn't go up there to the club no more. But he said, hey, Benny, why don't you take me up there so I can meet Dr. Dre? I said, no. I just want to do some ear hustling because I want to know how these rappers do this. See, I don't do that. That's what he said. I don't do that. I make my money on R&B. They making their money sampling my stuff. You know, I want to see what they do, Vinny. And I took him up to Death Row. And he met Suge and Dre. And I think Suge Knight told him, hey, Suge Knight told Dr. Norman, he said, they said I'm the new Norman Whitfield. Norman said, I didn't bully people. Norman said, you ain't never known me to bully people. He said, I might flash some money on them every now and then, but I wasn't like that. I treated people to breakfast. I did everything. I paid my people. I wasn't like that. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I said, Norman, we up here at Death Row. He said, man, look, I ain't worried about all that, Benny. You know, he said, but don't misinterpret me. He said, I wasn't like you. I said, wow. And that was a moment. That was a moment, bro. But me and Lord G and Tony, we never got any backlash, really. We got a few little things one time, but it wasn't nothing bad. But it wasn't good for some people. But really, nothing physically happened to us. We just end up kind of severing ties with them. And then when Dr. Dre went to Aftermath, I was able to go over there and have the CD that he wanted for Lord G. And I happened to have Eminem's CD with me. And I said, look, this is a white rapper from Detroit that you want to check out. And he looked at it. At the time, it wasn't happening like that. He just looked at me and said, okay, I'll take a listen to it, but I ain't really interested at this time. I'm interested in a ghostwriter and a producer right now to help me over here at Aftermath. And I want to see what Lord G got. And that was the end of it. And then they had the Rap Olympics down in L.A. And they had that. And then Mark Bass and Jeff, they were down here, and they entered him into the Rap Olympics. And so Lord G at this time had got with a group called Militia. And we had a number one record in L.A. called Burn. So we were promoting a lot of the stuff everywhere in L.A. So I had some street teams and different people working the record. And so I had to work the Rap Olympics. And so Mark called me and said, Vinny, we got a new CD hot off the press. The new Slim Shady EP. Just Don't Give a Fuck was the name of it. He said, could you come to the hotel? He said, would you come to the hotel and get it? Because it just came in. Nobody has it. And this is the story that I have that I've never talked. This is the first interview that you hear me talking about this ever, because I kept it underneath my belt because I didn't want to feel like, you know, this is how Dr. Dre actually got Eminem at this Rap Olympics. And what happened, I had the CD, so I took it down to the Rap Olympics and I got with my street team, and there was two interns, these two white interns, Evan Bogart and Dean Blessinger, I can't remember his last name, and they worked for Interscope. And they knew Mark and everything, but they didn't have this CD. I had it. So I was down there putting it out, promoting it, and so I gave the CD to those interns. The rest is history. Because the story is there's two interns that got the CD from the Rap Olympics, and they turned it into their boss, Jimmy Iovine, and Jimmy Iovine called Dr. Dre and said, hey, you need to blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, my God. That's one way. And then the other time, Militia, my group Militia, Lord G and Militia, was doing, their record was so hot at the time, they did a show at UCLA with Ice Cube and the Goody Mob and Mac 10. And Eminem was in town after he had took second place for the Rap Olympics when all this other stuff happened that I just told you. But he wanted to go to the Rap Olympics, to see Sway and Tech. He didn't know how to get there. So I had him on the stage with my guys, and I said, look, I'm going to give you 3 minutes to open up for us, blah, blah, blah. And he said, man, I got to go because the wake-up show. He said, but I don't know how to get there. I said, well, the wake-up show and the 92 The Beat is sponsoring this concert right here that we're at. It was over 3,000 to 4,000 kids in there from UCLA. And so I said, come on, man. I let my guys stay with Lord G and them, and I'll take you up to the station. And so I took him and his people that he was with up to 92 to 3 The Beat, and Sway and Tech had a show there. And that's how he got in there and went upstairs. And then on my way back, he was freestyling on the air, and everybody heard him. And boom, 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 boom. It was just on for Eminem because it was not good at first. And so that's my early promotion thing I did to help Mark and Jeff from Dream Boy, and then to help Eminem. And then, so I never talked about it until now, because now my book is about to be out, so that's what I'm talking about. And there's a whole lot to it. Some of my people is going to say, man, you're talking too much, but I'm not. I'm doing this on purpose because it has to be said, and I enjoy it. And because Kim brought me here, I want it to all be said and how it was. Because Kim, I think you knew Mark Bass, too. I know Sylvia knew him. Sylvia Moore knew Mark Bass and Jeff Bass. That was a part of Dream Boy back then. They were the only – Jeff Bass was the only white guy in the group. And then Mark Bass was a road manager and equipment guy like me. Me and him started in Dream Boy as side people and road managers and stuff like that. So we had a really nice bond and everything. So those are the gentlemen that actually I don't say they discovered Eminem, but they definitely made moves to get him to where they got him to, and the rest is history. Now they did a song called Lose Yourself that everybody heard on Super Bowl night, and we're gonna perform that on Sunday with one of my rappers, because I still kind of dabble with my rappers. And you know, I'm a little older now, so I don't get out there as much because it's crazy, you know. But I'm happy about it, and we're gonna uplift Mark and Jeff, because Jeff lives in Costa Rica now, so he's not here, and Mark got sick and he lives in Florida, and so they're not able to be with us on Sunday. So we're gonna make sure, just like we're honoring Kim and Norman, we're gonna put up and let everybody know, hey, we with our boys, we with them, you know what I mean. And so that's basically the story in a nutshell with all the surrounding stuff. I haven't talked about my own career and some of the songs I did and as a writer and producer, and then some of the songs that Lord G did. We had a long career in L.A., and it was very good for us. We didn't become famous, but we lived our life good, and we're happy about what we did. And God stayed there with us. We didn't sell our soul. We didn't have to do none of that. So... you know, and I don't even know if it's selling your soul. It's just that you get caught up sometimes in the light, you know. And Norman was that hand to calm us down, and he really did. He really put his hands on us and said, "Look, guys, I'm gonna be behind the scenes with you, so you just don't mention my name." That's what he told me. But he said, "But I got you, son," and he helped. He that's what I meant. Earlier I told you he saved my life. It was a lot going on, you know what I mean? And Norman was that Norman was that rock, you know. So I ran my mouth so much. So I'm hoping that everybody else can chime in. Adina's going to kill me because she said I'm talking too much. But I'm good. I love you, Adina. Sheila, I love you guys. Thank you. Huh?
You didn't take Norman around nowhere else where they were shooting at, right?
Oh, no, not ever again. Oh, he wasn't going to that. He wasn't going. That was at a club. He was like, man, is you crazy?
No, no more of that.
I had a good time. This was the other thing, and I'm going to stop. I'm going to let everybody else talk now and do what they ask questions or whatever they want to do, but this is where I'm going to end it, because my story gets deeper as Norman started becoming more sick and then wanting to do some things on his own, and that's how he started working with my son. And him and my son, that was such a special relationship, and stuff we went through, it was very special. Yeah. So that's why the stories are so long, because I'm only telling you a surface of them, because it got deep later on. And like I said, I'm gonna let everybody else ask more questions about what was going on or whatever. And I'll give a little bit of stuff, but not a whole lot, you know. I already give enough, you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I have a song.
I had lost my...
Go ahead. I was going to tell you, I have a song with Tupac and Dr. Dre. You said you knew both of them,
okay.
And I have a song we did together. It's called California.
Is that California,
so I want to play this. Yes.
California Love.
So I'm gonna play this, and then you can give us whatever info you have on this. Okay?
Okay, I will. Mm-hmm.
California. Everybody to the wild, wild west, a state that's untouchable like Elliot. your eardrum like a slug to your chest. Back a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex. We in that sunshine state where the bomb ass pimp be. The state where you never find a dance floor empty and pimp be. On a mission for them greens. Lean, mean, money making machines, serving fiends. I've been in the game for 10 years making rap tunes. Ever since honeys was wearing Sassoon. Now it's 95 and they clock me and watch me diamond shining. Looking like I'm Rob Liberace. It's all good. Your city is the bomb if your city making pain. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California, yeah.
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
I hear you now. Yeah.
Okay. Thank God we still have rhythm and blues.
Why you say that?
Oh, because that I just don't do rap. I just, oh, my. I can understand how. Go ahead.
Let me give you some insight since you said give me my spiel on that.
Okay.
You know our I should say this. The generations of music, it always changes. The youth,
yes.
The sound of young America back in the 60s was what? Motown. Those young people, like Miss Kim, 17, 16, those days, that was their time. So then you go to the 70s, you got the same thing. It was bands. It was funk bands, like Parliament Funkadelic.
Yes.
And that was changing. Yes. And I know you like Parliament Funkadelic, right?
Yes, I do.
We all did. Yes.
Yes.
So now go to rap. Rap came out, and they took an art form that incorporated R&B music. They were sampling James Brown and Good Times and all these 70s records and making them relevant again and keeping that R&B love live again. So now the content of that music may have been totally different. It wasn't at one time. It was not different because the early rap thing was all positive. Okay, it wasn't focusing on the negative. It was good sounding rap. We just couldn't get to the rap. That's what they say. But when you go back a little further, you listen to Gil Scott-Heron and the What's
even
the other
Isaac
boy?
Hayes.
I know y'all knew what I'm talking about. Huh? Not Isaac Hayes. The last guy that was doing more. Huh?
I say the last poet.
The last poet. The last poet.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And then even, remember that one guy, what does he call himself? Give here? No, not Joe Tex. But Joe Tex, too, to be honest. He had his own little form. And then, I mean, there was another guy, I can't remember. Here comes George. It's that guy, and there was a couple other ones that was doing certain things that just didn't get the attention, but it opened up that door for those guys in the early 70s, I mean, the late 70s,
that's
early 80s. To give you rap music. And then they didn't want.
I don't know how many people are really familiar with him. What's that guy over there?
Who?
Oscar Brown Jr., Brown Baby.
Oh, Oscar Brown Jr., I'm not even familiar with that.
Oh, wow.
Really? I got to go look that up now. Yes, but here's what Dr.
I'm sorry,
Dre did. Why he's
I thought Brother Ray was saying something.
I was saying to Kim, yes, I remember Oscar Brown Jr. What's that over there? And who's that over there? And Daddy, can I have that big elephant over there? Remember that?
That's it.
That was just
I'm building up to something about Dr. Dre, so you'll know how important this dude is to rap.
Okay.
He is the Norman Whitfields and the Eddie Hollins and the Quincy Joneses of the rap industry right now. That's him. And what he did was he made rap really relevant because he mixed the R&B, the funk, and the music and made a cleaner, better, bigger sound for hip-hop and took it to another height. People didn't even want to hear what you're hearing with Tupac. You go, I don't really get it, because it's kind of vulgar. It's kind of, like, abrasive. It's rebellious type stuff. But if you look
well,
at
not
these
only
guys,
that,
they're,
it's
they're
the temple. It's something in that temple or something that is just, or maybe it's just the music. It's not real music. It's not the bands and things like that that, you know, we heard.
That's what I'm trying to explain to you with Dr. Dre. I don't know if you know that record you just played was a famous record by an R&B guy. I mean, well, it was an R&B. It was a pop guy or soul guy. That was Oscar's song.
Oh, okay.
Which you just heard that Dr. J replayed it and redid it and made it bigger and better. And so those are people playing instruments. He took the industry as a producer to a whole nother level, you know, that created that sound. That Joe Cocker sound with Roger Troutman in it was so nice, and it brought back a whole new experience. And, hey, I bet Joe Cocker happy that he did it, you know. And, and Tupac is a legend. He is who he is. He's telling that story that young America was going through in the 90s. See, just like young America was going through something in the 60s, the civil rights and all that. Mm-hmm. The same thing repeating itself, but they do the same thing to us today like they did back then with our black youth and what we were doing and all that. So I know some of us don't like rap. We don't like some because they promote the vulgar stuff more than they promote anything. They'll tell you about all the – that's what their industry does because it's selling records. For some reason, people gravitate to that, you know. And then you got a guy like Dr. Dre who turned a lot of things around. He was responsible for so many people's careers in his day that's why he's a billionaire. That's why he's a super producer of his time and definitely the greatest rap producer ever. you know, in my eyes at least. And that's why Norman Whitfield wanted to meet him. Norman Whitfield told me, he said, that dude is like us. He might be better than us, Benny, because he doing different stuff. I don't know nothing about no rap, but look what he did. He fused this stuff, bands, R&B, different things, taking their songs and doing what he did, and did an excellent job. And you have a lot of other guys like that in the rap industry that's doing things like that. And you have to admire their craft. You have to admire what they do in their own right. And Ice Cube, another one. I mean, you got guys that's just – I watched them coming from a rap. I'm coming from R&B, funk. That was my thing. I was a Parliament Funkadelic, Rick James, Rolls Royce guy. Those were my favorite groups. And I used to watch the funk festival with Parliament Funkadelic smoking joints and Rick James all on stage and doing all kind of crazy stuff. But we didn't say nothing then because we was all there with it. But now the rappers come out and they do some stuff. And they looking at, oh, I don't want this. I mean, our own people was against rap for a long time.
You know,
to the kids.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so relevant now. The kids looking for something that wants to hear them. They want to, just like they did in the 60s, you wanted to hear Motown. Them people wasn't old doing them records. Them people was young, you know, and they had that, you know, and built. Yeah. So that's the kind of like you look at the book, you know, you look at the how what the Lord gave us, you know, we know who they say runs the industry, right? We know what they say who's down here doing it, but at the end of the day, guess who got the last say? Hey, God got the last say on everything.
Oh, most definitely.
Oh yeah, God got to say on everything, even down here, him running the industry, his boy, well, the one he kicked out, and said, you're going to go down there and run the industry. At the end of the day, we going back to God all the time. All the time. We start with God, the gospel, all that stuff. We may leave every now and then, but guess where we end up at all the time?
Well, that's the only place we can. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
all of
most
us.
Most definitely.
Even the ones, what do they do when they go to jail for life and all the stuff they do? First thing they do is what? Oh, God, help me.
Yes. Yes,
even
that's what I hear.
Wrong. Oh, God, help. That's the first thing they do. Call
yes.
God. And what God do? Okay, I forgive you, but you know you got to do your time. You know you got to do this. You know this might happen, but hey, I got you.
Yeah.
God win all the time. God win all the time. That just makes the devil mad. He come back down here and hurt somebody else. Hurt so many people in that industry is ridiculous. But we have to look at ourselves, too. We definitely do. Norman taught me this because he knew I didn't know what I was getting into. He said, boy, you're so gullible. You don't even know what you're. He said, you need to tune them glasses up. he said, you should turn these guys up, boy. This ain't. He said, I was raised by Berry Gordy. I don't answer to nobody but him. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, that's because he took the time out to do what he did for me, and he made a lot of us rich. Some of us didn't make it, some of us did. And you got to have thick skin. He said, but, you know, I didn't like everything he did. Nobody liked everything he did. But he built a company with Young America that opened up all of our eyes and gave us a platform to take care of our families. And that's what it was all about. They had more unity in the 60s. You thought more unity in the 60s and the 70s, and just as well as it did back in the 1920s when they stopped us with the Black Wall Street stuff. I mean, back in the day when, from what I understand, our black community was so well together in those 1900s, early 20s, and they were on the rise, and they just did what they did to stop us, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm really looking at that, even in my age today, and I'm watching, trying to teach my son some stuff, because these youth today, is way smaller than what we ever was. And Rodney, you did. All of this dirt, all this telephone, like, I thank God for technology, don't get me wrong, but it made us happen. We were able to do this on the phone like this. We wouldn't do this back then. But at the same time, it ruined some stuff, you know. It ruined some stuff. It ruined growth because they kept it away from us, or we didn't want to listen. We didn't want to read. We didn't want to take, you know, we went for the fame. We went for all these different things. But you know what? A lot of us didn't listen to the Kim West. We didn't listen to the Kim Westons. We didn't listen to the Normans. We didn't listen to the Berries the way we should have listened to them, because they fought for us. And I can't leave out Stapp's Records. I can't leave out Gamble and Huff and Philly Sound. Them three labels right there. And let's not forget about Black Swan Records, the first black record label in the 1920s. They shut them down too. Then let's not forget about VJ Records, owned by a black woman.
Oh,
wow. The biggest label at that time for black people in the 50s and 60s, they had all of the people, blues and singers, and right across the street from Cadillac Records, not Cadillac because it wasn't Cadillac, Kess Records.
Uh-huh.
You got Ewart Abner, all these people, and I'm in a history thing right now because I love history, and I read about and studied all this stuff about all these companies because I've always wanted to be in the record industry all my life. From Bay City, didn't know nothing. Just read. I had a problem with seeing, but God gave me enough to put that book close up to my face. And people laugh at me to this day because I look at my phone so close. They say, why do you do that? Don't you got glasses? I'm nearsighted. The glasses help me see far away. I see better close, you know. So I read all this stuff and was able to stick it in my brain, especially listening, talking about W.C. Handy and I forget the guy's name, Page that or whatever, that started Black Swan Records, that possessed, that gave us Bessie Smith, Ma Rainey, and all them kind of people. And they shut their doors as they were so successful. They wanted to sell music in their own community to their own people. And that's what they were doing. They were successful. And in 2 years, they shut them down, made them go bankrupt, all that kind of stuff. You know, so I like I said, VJ Records is the company that owned the Beatles and Frankie Lyon in the Valley in the Four Seasons before Capitol did it. They sold their contract to them for the Beatles in the Frankie Valley in the Four Seasons. Okay, that was some black people that had that. Okay, VJ Records. Okay, they had Curtis Mayfield, Staples Center, all the people that Chess Records didn't have, and they were competitive back in those 50s and early 60s. Okay, Motown became that next label in 59, and then Stax had already started too, but it was Motown, the youngest, that came into play after VJ Records. And Ewart Abner, who used to be at VJ Records, he started working for Berry Gordy. And I had a chance to meet Mr. Ewart Abner through Norman. Norman introduced me to everybody I ever want to meet in my life, including Berry Gordy, took me to his house. That's why you hear me so passionate about Norman. And people say, why are you writing? Why are you like that? I said, because me and Norman's relationship wasn't about his music. Me and Norman's relationship became, of course he wanted to be in his music, but it became more about our relationship between each other and what he was mentoring me trying to do in my days trying to be in the music industry. And he told me, if you get a record on the radio, because you do everything, I ain't never had a guy around me that didn't need my help. You came to me and you never needed my help. You never asked for it. Next thing I know, you got your rapper on the radio. You did this. I was just watching you. He said, that's why I came and got you. He said, I'm going to help you because you stuck your foot in your mouth with that case. You know, he said, you don't know what you're doing. You know, but that's what our relationship was about. Our audition was about, hey, Vinny, I'm not that guy no more, but I can give you what I got, what I know. And that's what he did, you know. And I cherish that man for that.
Mm-hmm. Vinny, you know what came to me earlier today? I saw in the relationship, and you talking about Norman, the son, he had sons, but you're the son that he wanted, that was interested in what he was about. And he was able to pass it on to you, and I thank God for you being there for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he my relationship with his son became tighter, too, by them being around, because his first son, Norman Jr. was the one. You might want to find this song, Antoinette, and play it. It's called Pain. That was on Above the Rim soundtrack. And Norman Whitfield Jr. is the one who remixed that and the one who took it to the company and said, y'all don't have a song on Tupac in his own movie. Let me remix this one. Let's do this. This is called Pain. And that's how it got on the soundtrack. And then while he was doing that song, because he took two of my records, All Right, and then Lord G's record Deeper, and Norman Whitfield Jr. took those songs and put them in the movie to Tupac's movie, and we and our songs was featured in all the basketball scenes that was playing in there with Leon, and so that was a big part for us in there, and so Tony Green had him on the Above the Rim soundtrack with the song My Money Right, and then Norman Whitfield Jr. gave me me and Lord G's other song Deeper and my song All Right, which was sung by the guy Teron Brooks that was in the movie with Eddie Kendricks, playing Eddie Kendricks, The Temptations. I managed him too. And so he put those in the movie for us. And then here's the cold part. We was in the studio, Blue Palm Studio, Trevor Lawrence's studio, Blue Palms. And Tupac was in there with Norman Jr. And they were doing the song Pain. Norman walks in. We walk in. Tupac is excited about Norman Whitfield because he knew who he was. He bowed down at Norman's feet. Okay? Bowed down at Norman's feet. He said, this is the man right here. 3 days later, a week later, something like that, Tupac's boys and all them beat up Norman Jr. Ain't that crazy?
Oh, my. Why?
Because Norman mixed the song without asking them to do it. But it ended up, he was the mix on the song, period. They was in the studio with Blue Palms doing it, but they weren't there when he did this mix or whatever, and he went on and mixed it and turned it into the company, but that's how it got on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's how it happened. But, yeah, so it was so crazy. I was like, why would they do something like that? But
it was done without permission, right?
Permission. Norman Jr. was signed to do that mix on the song. He was just mixing it, you know, just mixing it. And they needed to turn the song in or something like that. He went on and mixed it and turned it in. That's what happened. So I can't say he didn't have permission. It's just that's the industry. That's guys in the rap industry. You don't do something without telling me or whatever. That's my stuff. Whatever, how it went. But that's actually the story of what happened and how I had a little bit of knowledge on that whole situation. And that goes back to what we were talking about with California Love. I got a chance to meet Roger Troutman out of that deal at Larrabee Studios because he was up there working with them. Now, Roger Troutman did Norman's song, I heard it through the grapevine over, and they did another R&B number one hit with his version of Grapevine. Yeah, so I was very, very in a place to where that I would never have been if it wouldn't have been for Norman. And back to Norman Jr., Norman Jr. is a good guy. I mean, you know, he was following in his father's footsteps. He's one of the greatest mixers. He's a great mixer, you know, when he does the music. And he was a really good guy. and that unfortunately that it happened to him. But it wasn't like they just beat him, being down that crazy stuff. No, it was just one of them things, you know. And he fixed it, but I bet they're crazy now because the record did real well, you know.
Yeah.
If he had to, So you know, you got to give him his props. You know what I mean? Before I go any further, I made a comment earlier about the people. I'm always giving props to the people because you never do things by yourself in this industry. People always look at me and say, why do you do that? Because you know what? I know who put me there. I know who did certain things for me. And I know there's always a chain of command and there's always somebody. I was listening to Miss Kim, who was on the last interview, and she's talking to Eddie's kid. She said, oh, didn't my cousin? It was somebody nobody know that got Kim in the studio or whatever, and then it went from there. It's always somebody, you know, that don't get the acknowledgement or get sliced over about something, but it's always a chain of different people that's been very detrimental to people's careers. Unfortunately, I had at least five of them. And, you know, that kind of thing. So I have to go back and say, I forgot about Mark Scott from Detroit. If it wasn't for Mark Scott bringing my cousin Lord G to California in the first place, there wouldn't have been Billy Hearns coming. There wouldn't have been Tony Green. You understand what I mean? I got to give props to Mark because Mark came out there and lived, and he was right down the street from my relative's house when he came. So it was really interesting getting started. He'll be loving me now because I said I'll never forget. I will always tell the truth for how Lord G got out here and his career started. It started with Mark Scott. So shout out to Mark Scott. And I done ran my mouth 100 miles an hour. So I'm going to.
You're good.
That was the story that I was going to tell tonight. You know what I mean? Well, then we'll tell a story another time. You know?
Yes, a lot of the music from the 60s, they, you know, was around the civil rights era, as you said. And, you know, when I think back to the 90s, one of the big things was Rodney King's Beatin'. Did the music from the aftermath, was there any music that really came out from what he suffered?
Say that again.
Was there any music that came from what Rodney King endured?
Oh, it was a lot. It was a lot of stuff happened right around all that. Ice Cube did documentaries. He did a lot of music. There's a lot of music that happened when that happened. The uproar happened with all that. I can't even tell you all the songs, but you know there was a lot, you know. And the 60s. Riots start. You got to remember, it happened in L.A. before it happened in Detroit, the 65 riot about police brutality. Okay? So, and then it happened in Detroit in 67. And then, of course, there's probably a whole bunch more. Now you got a whole bunch more now happening with the same stuff that's going on right now, killing people. Now they're killing folks like that. We didn't even hear about the killings when they was lynching people as much. And sometimes that was hidden. You know, and I'm talking about an era I know nothing about because I was born in 62. So, and, you know, but there's a lot of history to be told. There's a lot of stuff that people sweep underneath the rug that we don't need to do that with. You just tell the truth because the truth will set you free.
Yes, that is true. I mean, but in light of everything that we're going through today, you know, as you said, we have a lot of background. We
The story that you told me about Norman going to Rodney King's house.
Oh yeah. You want me to tell him that?
Yeah.
Hey, Kim. I'm going to tell it because you asked me to. I was going
to. Well, you don't have to tell everything, I have a reason for asking you to tell that but when it ends up.
Okay. And here's what I'll say. Norman was going through some stuff, with one of his sons. We won't get into that story, but he was looking for representation as a lawyer. And me and Norm was coming from Vegas, and I had no idea what was really going on, but I had some idea. And he said, "Vinny, ain't Rodney King your cousin?" I said, "Yeah, he had a baby with my cousin. He married my cousin, my first cousin." And that's how I've been knowing him a lot, for long, all our lives. He said, "Well, go by his house." I said, "Norman, clock 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning." He said, "I don't care. Call him up." I called him up and said, "Rodney." I said, "Rodney, I'm coming by." He said, "Man, I'm up." You know, he was a late guy anyway. You know, "I'm up." And yeah. I said, "Well, Norman Whitfield, the writer, want to come and say, ask you a few questions." He said, "Okay." Norman, we got to the driveway. Norman said, "I ain't going in this house. I don't know them. I don't know what the..." Yeah, he always made some facts, but, you know, he made some jokes too, boy. He said, "Yeah, they might come in and beat our ass too." He talking about the police. I said, "Man, you crazy." He said, Ronnie came outside, and he said, "I got one question." He said, "Do you know who Milton Grimes is?" Rodney told him, "Yes." And then he told him what about Milton Grimes, which is the attorney that actually got Rodney his settlement from the police department.
Yeah.
But Rodney fired him, and he started going with the other guys, which was white guys. And they sucked the blood out of that dude. They sucked the blood out of him with his money, and he didn't never pay Milton Grimes. So Milton Grimes had a lawsuit against Rodney. Yeah, Milton Grimes. I'm not telling anything today in the news, so that's why I'm telling the story, because I'm not telling anything that don't nobody know. They just don't know the part about Norman Whitfield, okay?
Right.
And the reason why he wanted to go see him, and the reason was he wanted to need some information on the lawyer if he was going to spend his money to represent his son.
The reason I'm asking you to do that is because what we're talking about is just coming together. The black lawyer is the one that got him the money, and then he turned and went with the white people, and they took everything that he had, and he didn't pay the black man for his service. You see, those are the kind of things that we're straightening out.
Exactly. But Rodney told Norman Whitfield, he said, Milton Grimes is a good man. And he, if it wasn't for him, and after they took Rodney's money, Milton had it set up to where he's going to get money for the rest of his life anyway. So he still got his kids, I think, get that now. But that was great that he did that. So Norman is that kind of guy. He wants to see after that happened. We was on our way home. He said, "Vinny, I want you to call Charlene. My ex-wife, or call Moody, tell Moody, blah 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 blah, and here's a check. Okay, I don't know what's gonna happen, but Vinny, your job is to go to court every day and see what's going on with my son's case, because I ain't going." That's what he said. "I ain't going."
Yeah.
I would say a week at most. Johnny Whitfield came home. God brought him home, and he's with his mom. He's in Atlanta right now. I talked to him this morning, okay? And he told me this: "Hey, man, my mama's on her way to Detroit right now. So you take care of my mama, man. If you see her, she might come to the show, she might not." Oh, my God. I was like, you got to be kidding me, because his mother was very, very good to me and my son and her husband, Mr. Taylor.
Aww.
They were good to us when they were in L.A., during Norman's illness. They were good to us, good people, very good people. And she stood by Norman all the way as well. So I'm right now hoping that I see her while she's here. So I'm not guaranteed she's going to be at the show event, but she might. So she's here on business, so it might not happen. But we don't know. But I've definitely reached out and going to try to make sure. And so that is the story, Kim. Norman, like I said, it's...
I was just saying, I just wanted to bring that to the front, as something that we need to deal with, you know, which goes
exactly.
back to the integrity. You got to bring that up.
Yes. The unity in the community. We got to have unity in our community. Organize. You can't do nothing because everybody be fighting all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey,
that's
Jeff.
Where it goes back to Brother Ray.
Say hi to Kim on
there.
Hey, Kim. I seen you trying to call me when I was in rehearsal. Hey, folks.
Yeah, this is Miss Antoinette.
Hello.
Her show.
Hello.
That's Mr. Jeff Stanton.
Oh, hello,
Mr.
Jeff
Stanton.
Hello. Hello, ladies.
That's the dream boy.
That's the
oh,
dream boy.
Oh, okay.
And Box is here, too.
Oh, wow. Hello, everyone.
Miss Kim, I can't wait to see you, young lady. It's been far, far too long.
Did you hear that, Kim?
Listen, I'm ready.
Come on.
All right.
All right. So, Miss Antoinette. I'm ready for some of that love. Well, y'all have to hear Brother Ray. Brother Ray can sing too. Yes.
For sure. I got to tell you this, Kim.
You.
I mean, Antoinette. While I got the guys here, you might want to pull their song up called Friends. And then their hit record was Don't Go. But Friends is such a valuable song because we all been friends for 40 years.
Yeah.
And we become full circle and we still together. We got brotherly love more than anything. The hell with the industry. We got that unity that Kim is talking about. We got it amongst our group.
Oh, see, that's good.
You know, and so their hit record was called Don't Go that Quincy Jones signed, and then we had a song called I Promise, and then the Friends song you might want to even end it with Friends tonight because that's, you know, I'm almost in tears right now.
Oh, I don't have that on the playlist, but I will get it.
Okay. Okay, I just want to let you know, because like I said, my book is called Dream Boy Norman and Me. Those were my influences in the industry that helped me go to what I did.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's really good.
And once again, let's not forget Miss Sheila Finn and Sheila Finn Productions, and let's not forget Adina Holland, okay? These two rocks right now. That's been there for me and guided me through and helped me get to where we are right now. And, of course, my buddies, Jeff Stanton, George Dewey Twyman, Jimmy Box Hunt, Paul Stewart, Jeff Bass. Okay? And there's several other people that helped us along the way, but that was the Dream Boy clique, all the people I just named. And then, of course, Norman and Spider, Renee Featherston, who was very good to me in L.A., Joe Pep Harris, who's good to me right now, was part of Norman, Wawa Watson, the fellas from Rolls Royce. The list goes on. This is 40 years of stuff, you know what I mean? That's making me do this situation or talk about this situation, and we come in full circle, all coming back, you know, and we're coming back for the good to help the next generation come up and know that our story is talking about 40 years of friendship that we didn't let that get in our way. We all moved on, we group broke up and everything, but everybody went on and did their own thing and did very well, you know, and here we are back again. You know, and I've been having this floor so much. Brother Ray been so quiet, and the guys got to know who he is. I know some of them, they might know. You know, I didn't know, but Brother Ray is something else too.
Yes, he is. Yes, he most definitely is. Well, we have time.
Brother
we
Ray
need to play
first man.
Yes,
we have time for you to play first man.
Yeah,
I'd like for them to hear that.
Okay, do y'all mind if I play it now?
Jeff, they want y'all to hear First Man. Okay. This is the guy, Ray. What's Ray? How you pronounce Ray's last name again?
Fauntroy.
Like Leroy Fauntroy?
Leroy Fauntroy.
No,
right.
Ray.
Like Leroy
Ray
Fauntroy.
Hold up, y'all. It's Ray Fauntroy.
They probably know
we
Walter.
Got you.
We did a lot of work in Detroit, so they probably know Walter Fauntroy. I'm Raymond Fauntroy.
Yeah.
They call me Ray.
Walter Fauntroy? Okay.
Former congressman Fauntroy.
Fauntroy. Okay.
I think Festival did something for Congress. Festival did something for Congress when Fauntroy was there.
And he was one of Marvin Gaye's pastors. One of his, Marvin would go to church sometimes.
That's brother,
so that's probably the connection.
Hey, bro, we just pulled you up on the net here. I see you, bro.
Yep, and I'm getting ready to play it now. Y'all ready? This is Brother Ray, First Man.
Brother, you're the father of the earth. First man, sister, you're the mother of the earth. First woman, brother, you're the father of the earth. First man, sister, you're the mother of the earth. First woman. Life began in Africa. Started out with you and her. God gave you the riches of the land. You put the whole world in your hands. You sailed your ship across the sea. Back in the day when man was free. Brother, you're the father of the earth. Come on, wake up now. You're the father. And the pyramids, they've been here 12,000 years. You charted the heavens with your eyes, flew your spaceships through the sky. You crossed the Alps on an elephant's back to save your land. Let's talk about that. Brother, you're the father of the earth. Come on, we go now. You're the father. The earth, 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 the earth,
Yes. All right, that was manned by Brother Ray.
Yeah.
By Ray Ponsor.
Yeah, that's just the message I think we need to
really
be talking about.
What'd you say, Dennis?
See, we're talking about coming together now, and, you know, that's just the message that we tried to put out some time ago to wake us up and come together. We are the original man. We are the first man. This is ours. And we need to organize ourselves together. And I like what you're doing. One of the questions I want to ask you was about the music, because I do believe music is a universal language and that people hear, you know, hear the music will bring us together. And I see that our music, that music that you guys created and produced, is being, sampled by others. I'm hearing different songs.
I missed that right there. Something happened. You went in and out.
I'm saying that I wonder if we're doing anything to preserve our music that has been created and that we will create. Because I see that it's being attacked as we've always been for the best. And it's time to preserve some of our history and our music.
For sure. I was listening to what you were saying. I was getting ready to comment on what you were saying, that I was going to ask you guys' opinion about something, and it's got something to do with Motown. And you know, everybody's selling their publishing, everything, you know, just getting rid of it or whatever. And I've always wondered, and this is no diss to Berry Gordy, never would be. I admire that man. But I always wondered, why would you sell all of that stuff and sell it back and not what he owned, what they owned? He gave it all back, sold it. And now Sony or whatever label that was.
Universal.
Yeah, they own, it's Universal, yeah. Now they own all that stuff over there. Martin Luther King speeches, all kind of stuff. And I wonder sometimes, like Ray was just saying, we need to preserve our stuff. We need to do this and do that. And then look at Stax Records and all that. Them people's stuff is in the hands of somebody else. Now, I do realize that there's a principle behind that publishing, and there's business behind it. We have to have the right infrastructure to handle things so large. But where's those top of the line people that we're looking for? Like Kim was saying, where's those top of the line people that's going to hold on to this stuff?
And let me tell you where they are.
Generation?
Can I tell you where they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look in the mirror, my brother. Look in the mirror, my brother. You're in.
No, you're right.
We're in. We don't do it. Nobody's going to do it for us but us. And there's a reason why our stuff is sold off. And that's why I'm here trying to organize now, trying to reorganize our people. We're trying to take back what they took from us. And it's only going to be done through organization, like you said earlier. We've got to get organized to deal with this. This is a spiritual warfare. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. And these people have come. They came to kill, steal, and destroy. That's what they've done. That's what they're doing. So that's why we started the drum call. We are asking people to drum. And believe me, it is changing all over the world. The people who understand the drum, the people who understand the drum, and they are drumming and praying, and I'm praying divine intervention. Lord, we need you now. These people are killing us every day all over the world. So that's what the drum call is doing. So we're asking people to join that drum call 3 o'clock every Sunday, 3 p.m. Worldwide. So it's a synchronized drum. But you hear that drum sound going up to the heavens. And people are praying
And that prayer that we, for divine intervention, we're praying to ourselves, to the God that is in us. And once we understand that, this thing is over. And they know it. They know it. And they're trying to protect them too late. We're coming together. We're going to take back what we've taken from us. So the music is very important, brother. I appreciate what you're doing. I really do. And I thank God.
Thank you.
Sister Kim West.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it, and it's my pleasure. And again, I just lost my train of thought, y'all, because I'm doing like my mama said I do all the time. Shut up, boy. You're running your mouth. That's why you forgot what you was about to say, because you got so much up there, you're running your mouth. Shut up sometime. Don't you know how to sit down? Oh, yeah, man. I love it.
Let me say this. Tomorrow night at 9:00 Eastern Time, Brother Ray will be on, and it will be on organization of the Black community, and that's tomorrow night at 9:00. And this is part two, where we're coming together to do solutions and organizing, you know, so that we can get ourselves organized so that we can make these changes that we need to do. So we don't want y'all to forget tomorrow night at 9:00 to be with us. And, of course, don't forget Dry Bones on Sunday for the Helios Delios at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And Brother Ray and Brother Kim, is there anything that y'all want to say about the call for tomorrow?
Well, I'll just ask, you know, those who are available, listen in and participate, questions and answers. We hope we'll be giving you something to think about and, you know, something to do, because we all have to play a part. You know, we've got to come together and play a part. So we're going to be laying that out tomorrow. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. And next Wednesday, Brother Eddie... Eddie and I, my co-host, we will be together, and Brother Eddie does numerology, so he takes the word and he puts the numbers to it so that we can see what the code is. You know, it's breaking the code to the numbers, so the spell that they're putting on us by these words. So Brother Eddie breaks that down. So
okay.
We have a full record. Yes. Brother Eddie on time. Pardon me?
Was he on the line today?
Brother Eddie?
Yeah.
No, Brother Eddie hasn't said anything today. Maybe he'll pop in when he... Okay, here he is. Okay, just a moment. Hello, Brother Eddie.
Hello. How's everybody doing, family?
Everybody good?
Well, how are you?
Yes,
I'm doing great. And let me correct you. We might not be doing it next week. It might be the week after that, because I'm still getting the class together and getting downloads from the universe so that I could... be on point with what we're doing. But just like I was listening tonight, I love it, because it's no more than an extension of everything. Is a continuation, actually, and like the brother's doing his part and continuing the story of Norman.
Yeah.
So that's great, and that's what we're supposed to do, tell our story the correct way, you know. And music is key, because it is part of this paradigm shift we're going through. And I forgot to mention last night, dealing with the music, dealing with the paradigm shift to offset and block us, they're using 5G. Same number, paradigm shift is the same number as 5G. Mm-hmm. This is why they're using the music of the spheres called waves. We don't hear it like we hear music, but the waves are the music that they're using to offset the music that we're trying to deliver through our lyrics and our words. So I love what the family's doing. So, yeah, that's my part to bring the numbers, because music is the school we should be in. And they sent us home 2 years ago, called it home school. And we sent our children right back in their clutches. Instead of teaching them, the music is coming straight from the heart, straight from the muses of the universe. Because this music that comes down from above and it comes through us, and this is what we give to the people. So, yeah, it's time for it again, and that's why this time is called the Age of Aquarius, revealing all this. So everything is time for it to be revealed, and that's what everybody's doing, pulling the lid off,
yes,
pulling the layers back so we can see the real meat, because that's what it is. As Parliament says, the bigger the headache, the bigger the pill, baby, I am the big pill. And that pill you swallow, and you don't swallow this pill. This is the pill, the layers of skin back, so we can get to that banana. We can get to that onion. We can get to the real meat. So we got to pull these layers of all this garbage that we've been programmed to believe in so that the truth prevails. That's what we're talking about. That's the paradigm shift that we're all on, changing this nonsense, changing the chaos, and bringing the order. That's why the music and within the music is the order, family. So we own it. We're on it, and I love it.
Okay.
So with that, I will mute my line and listen and continue to take notes.
Well, that was great, Ms. Brother Eddie. I appreciate that, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my part of everything we're doing is to show they've separated us so much. And using this occult language called English that ain't ours, we now fell into the occultic, because we truly don't understand this language is the occult. So I've been given to see this through numbers to show that everything that we're saying by the word is different. They've given us different words that we're attached to. We hold on to the definition of those words. But behind the word is a number. Every word, every letter has a number. Once we see those numbers of the word, we can connect. And guess what, family? We've been saying the same thing by the number using different words, and it's the word that has us in confusion. This is why we got to take the word back. The word was God, which is us. The word was with God, and the word was God. That's why we got to take this word back, baby. And for me, it's revealed behind the numbers. That's why they said it's always been hidden in plain sight, right in front of us. We've been speaking it and couldn't see it. They call it a secret. We call it the truth, babe. And it's time for us to expose the truth and whoop they behind. And I'm being nice with my words. So, yeah, y'all know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
Well, I've been holding my phone. It's muted, Lord Jesus. Anthony, do you have sing?
Let me see. I should have it, Miss Kim. Let me make sure it's still there.
That's the one you sent me yesterday, wasn't it, Miss Kim?
Yes, sir.
Or today, one of them. Today, I think.
Today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you wrote last November. In November, wasn't it, Miss Kim? Yes, I do have it.
When you get a chance, I'd appreciate you doing that to me.
Yes. And I will play it in a moment. I'll play it before we leave the show. I will play it, Miss Kim.
Hey, Miss Antoinette.
Yes.
People on the line, did I run them off talking to all the people that was on the line?
No, we still have some here, and okay, anybody who, okay, I'll get you in one moment. Anybody, oh, shoot, now my words are getting tongue-tied. It's 4 minutes left, three. If you want to be able to continue the show, you have to call in. The call-in number is area code 515-605-9343. Again, that's area code 515-605-9343. And press the number 1 if you have a question or a comment. Okay. See, I get caught up in the conversations and I forget to announce anything. But we do have a caller with their hand up. Just a moment. Sister Paris. Sister Paris,
ma'am.
If you have yourself. Hello,
Miss Paris. Greetings, family. I just wanted to say thank you for the information and the enlightenment. Music is the key. And I'm just resting your family. And I thank you for putting this in my spirit. Thank you, Brother Eddie Harris, the numbers bomb man. Thank us. And greetings, Miss Kim, and to your guest, and greetings, Brother Ray. And I'm going to sign off and just let my body soak this in. I thank us. I needed to hear this tonight.
Oh. Oh.
Wow, that's
calling in. And Sister Paris, you get well. You get well.
Girl, what's happened here? This person is not agreeing with my body. And well, anyway, another show, another time. And I love my family, and I'm just grateful that my mom allowed me to get here, to be a part of what everybody is a part of on this podcast. Thank us. We got an echo. It might be me. I'm on a mute. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sister Paris.
Thank you, Sister Paris. Get well. God bless you.
Thank
we will be praying for you as well.
Thank God.
As in ourselves, too. Yes.
Oh, can I add this? Brother Ray is correct. We got to look in the mirror. If we have any health about us, we got to look in the mirror. And because family is all scattered, everybody is scattered, but we got to look in the mirror. We can't depend on anyone but us. And that's my word for today. Thank us, Brother Ray.
Thank you.
I'm going to play Sing, Sing, Sing by Miss Kim Whitson. And Miss Kim wrote this song as well. Okay.
Hallelujah.
But what I need help. See, I'm here by myself. After all these ladies singing together. But I'm wondering if I could get everybody to help me with this song. Could I get a little?
Oh, yeah.
What I need you to do is, when I let you give me the signal, I want you to say, sing, sing, sing. Can I hear you just say it right now?
Sing, sing, sing.
Now, for those of you that don't think that you can sing, you can sing it, okay? You can sing when you are happy. Sing when you are sad. Sing whatever comes your way. It's a key to being glad. I'm gonna take these shoes off.
There's
no need to complain.
That's right.
And you can just
sing.
Come on.
Sing.
There's a river.
Sing.
Sing.
Thank you. I'm dedicated to Brother Bill.
Hey, Tim.
Yes.
Did you play a piano too?
No. I wish I could play like that. I will.
Oh,
I did write
the song.
But that was at church, right?
That was at a church here in a church that I walked past all my life growing up and had never been inside that church because it's a white church.
Wow.
Pastor
wow.
Chicago, right there at the Eastern Market. All my life.
Wow.
That was the first time I ever
heard
a powerful
song. Yes. Yes, that needs to be heard.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Tim took her shoes off and was dancing around the church.
But you know, one thing I've learned, when God gave me that, He said, it's not what you're going through, it's how you're going through it. And when the enemy finds out that what he's doing no longer bothers you, he gets to go and get a new program.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Benny, we're looking to you guys to help revive our people with your music.
Yeah.
It's got to come back.
Yeah.
Got some great music. Even some of the songs that you did back in the day, they got to come back. And people got to hear them.
Yeah.
Even if you have to, you know, you guys know what to do. You know to go and reproduce them, rearrange them, or whatever. But the words got to be heard. And they need to be heard now.
Yes.
Times here, and we've got to bring our people together, because without a doubt, we are the target of this wicked system that we're living in. But God.
And that's what we've got to concentrate on. That's what we've got to concentrate. That's a part of the problem, that we're giving too much attention to the problem. We got to concentrate on the solution. Think about it.
I told you, you're absolutely right. And my whole plight is, another reason why I'm doing this is to keep the negative away from us and take our youth that's coming behind us and give them something, a platform to stand on, to get back to where we were with being unity amongst us, our community, having all that unity and organized like Ray is talking about, and making our futures for our children's children and so forth to have something to look for and say, hey, we took it back. We now we had another level that we never was before. We took it back, and we're gonna stay there. We're gonna keep that positive focus in our lives and put God first.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
Once again, this is such a powerful platform. I'm so glad that I'm able to get in now. I'm gonna be. I got in the other day. I had to get off, but I think it was yesterday. I got on and I had to get off because I was doing things. But I'm like, man, as long as I get an invite in here, I'm gonna be listening to a lot.
You're always invited. You have an open invitation. You're always invited. We're happy to have you.
Well, thank you very much, and it's my pleasure to even be. Like I said, I'm elated. Let's do this, Ray. I'm sorry, Ray. Let's put the unity back in the community.
Yeah. And, it takes everything. Yes, it takes everything. It takes, what y'all are doing, Vincent, and it takes Brother Ray with the organization. It takes Miss Kim with the music. It takes Brother Eddie with the numbers. We have Brother Kwame. Brother Kwame's not with us tonight, but it takes his knowledge, and Brother West, as a general, and, it's... we just need everything so that we come together, because it's so important that we come together.
But what we need to
do
first is acknowledge him, and he will direct our path.
That's right.
True.
Yes. You're absolutely correct. And we can't forget where we've been. We can't forget the past, but we still have to press forward. But we have to press forward with the knowledge of the past so that we know where we're going. Because we can't go anywhere without knowing what we came from. Because we have to give honor to those that set the pathway for us, that led the pathway, that they gave us the guidance. They may not have completed it, but they were walking on top of their... On top of them, I don't want to say it that way, but it's on their shoulders that we
head.
Pardon me?
I say, tell it like it is.
Exactly.
I mean, so, you know, I mean, each generation, you know, we're going back from the past to, you know, to keep going forward. I mean, one day, you know, our children, our grandchildren, they're going to be, you know, using the stepstones that we made, they're going to use their, you know, they're going to use us and to climb, you know, to keep climbing, because that's, you know, we're going to continue building, but it doesn't stop with us. You know, we're the beginning for our children and our grandchildren. You know, just like our parents and our grandparents and great-grandparents and, you know, so forth were for us. So we can't forget them. We have to continue to grow, but we also have to keep in mind that we're not doing it just for us. You know, we got to look at the children. We got to look at the babies. We got to look at the babies that aren't here yet. You know, the ones that are becoming, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, you know, they're still a part of our lineage. You know, we may not be here to see it, but, you know, we still have to build for them.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I'm grateful that we have Miss Kim and we have Brother Ray. And, you know, we still have our elders. I mean, it's great. We really have to, you know, we take the time to listen to them. They have a lot to tell us. And they want to tell us. It's just taking the time with them to listen, to really listen to what they have to say. And not only listen, apply it.
That's a two-way street, darling, because as Vinny was saying, we have to listen and see where the generations are coming from. Other than that, we're tuned out. So that it's a two-way street, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Right. So we got quiet there for a minute.
Can
we the only ones talking on the call? I wonder who else is listening.
Well, we have people that are here. They just haven't put their hands up, so I guess they're just listening. But if y'all have a question or a comment, just press the number one and I'll open your line. Because I won't open your line if you don't press the number one.
Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Yes, I just wanted to agree with Miss Kim, again, that two-way street. And like I said, for me, listening to everybody, my part is to bring us together by the words we speak but showing the numbers. Just like we have to listen to our youth because they're speaking with the new vernacular, with new cadence to their talking, the way that they use words today, the way we didn't use them because we were taught better at that time. We didn't have phones that we started texting and didn't use correct grammar and English and this, that, and that. So listening to them, I'm able, like we're all able, to hear what they're saying so that we can give it back to them. Is that my phone with echo or what?
Yeah, that's your phone, Brother Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's somebody else's.
Okay. But anyway, it's just like we said, once we acknowledge God, the Creator, and for me it's to show the numbers of the words we use so that they will see the real fight that we're in. Because, again, at the end of the day, the fight is mine, said the Lord. Understand it by number. Lord is 13, 4. Fight is 31, which is 4. For us, the fight is spiritual. Spiritual is 4. This is a spiritual war that we're in. But knowing this war by the words and seeing the number behind the words to see God that is, like Ms. Kim said, directing us, that's my direction that I'm trying to give to all of us so that we come together and stop being divided, because that's been America's mantra, slogan from the very beginning. United we stand, family. Divided we fall. And they've did a damn good job in dividing us. way before slavery. So now this division has been so sophisticated and updated, they're dividing the world. The world is being divided now.
Yeah,
so
the world
we're able to
chaos.
Have the insight. Yes, we're able to have the insight to see all of the so-called distractions and illusions so that we can inform the people. So that's what we're all bringing to the table, and at the same time bringing that fixing us, thank us, once we start fixing us, because it's up to us to fix us. We've been saying these things for the longest. That's why now I'm like, let me echo it and put an exclamation point with the numbers. So how long have we been saying this? Numbers don't lie, baby. Now I'm showing the numbers behind the words to show that the words we use of God do not lie, y'all. We saying it, but we can't even emphasize it because we have nothing but the words we've been taught of English by those who taught us in this ooh. I'm not going to get negative because we're trying to bring the positive, and let's stay on that positive frequency, you know, because, again, we direct the conversations. We got to catch our children and the youth at the root of the conversation so we can change this paradigm, because that's what's happening. Their root is being rooted in the computer, being rooted in technology, not being rooted in the frequency coming from the Creator. Because that's what we're a part of. We're supposed to pass that sound, that frequency. We're using music to pass it on. Keep passing it on, and as long as we pass on the right music, the right way, for the right reason, we will get the right result, family. It's the right on for me. All by numbers. I love it. But, yes, that's why we got to lift every voice. Because the voice, as long as that voice is ringing true, it's ringing God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the absolute family. And for me, they not here behind all these numbers and called it a secret. Ain't that a, I think Johnny Guitar Watson said it best. Ain't that a bitch? Somebody doing something slick. Got me wondering which is which. Make me want to go outside and dig a ditch. Ain't that a. Yeah, okay. But yes, family, I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. Y'all taking me way back. Miss Kim, after we got off last night, I had to pull up your video with you and Bill Cosby on that green-eyed monster and look at that and laugh. Had me laughing last night after the show. So I had to pull that up.
What's that? Where can I go see that at?
Oh no! Just pull it up on YouTube. Pull up on YouTube. The Bill Cosby Show. When Bill Cosby back in the 69 and 70s, he was called Ted Kincaid. Before they had him,
I remember that.
Vegetable. Right. So Miss Kim is on two episodes and as a love interest of Cosby back then, and it's called The Green Eyed Monster. So you can pull that up on YouTube. And it'll come right up, man, because that's what I did last night.
I'm going to show look at it tonight.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's looking at us. I had to detach my student that y'all heard last night and my cousin that called in and it sent it to them, and they freaked out. They was, oh, my God, oh, my. I was like, yeah. So y'all got to pass this information on now, see? Y'all getting some of it, you know, so, hey, y'all getting updated with stuff y'all didn't have. So, yeah, so I've been being texted all day by people who heard the show last night who enjoyed the show immensely. So, I love everybody who participated and everybody who listened and chimed in, everybody. It was greatly appreciated.
Yo, definitely. My pleasure, man. Man, I enjoyed this a lot. As y'all can see, I didn't got winded down now. And everybody else talking now. I'm sitting up here going, when I'm gonna talk again? But no, I'm just kidding. I'm good. I'm giving Adina something to laugh at because I know she over there. That boy hard at it.
Yeah. Oh my. Well, if everybody has any
comments that they wish to make.
Venus should come and let us hear what she's doing for the project.
I'm wondering if she's in. I don't know. I asked Sheila, but I don't know if Sheila's on. Sheila, I wanted her to talk about her part, what she's doing, but I guess she didn't get on.
No. Oh, what's your area code?
248.
No, they're not here. They may not have made it in because I was late announcing the closing.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm sorry she's not in.
Okay.
Brother Rex, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
I'd just like to thank you for this program. Thank Benny and all of the people who came on, because you've shared a knowledge that we didn't know, but that we long to know, and it's something that is going to help us remember all of the good times. Together to create some more good times like that. Because, the only way that can be reproduced is that you guys reproduce it. So you have a big job, man, and I just want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy, taking the time, and thank Sister Kim for bringing you on, because she understands very well what this is and what we're trying to do. I don't know if she told you all the story about how she and I met back in the 60s. Beautiful black woman singing, lift every voice and sing, the first time I heard. And it just locked into my heart, into my mind, into my being.
Hallelujah.
And I thought about it. But then I realized that she's still with us, and she's still available to the people. She has become, in my opinion, the matriarch of the movement to wake our people. In that drum call, and she is part of the board of directors, by the way, in that drum call, she ends each prayer with lift every voice and sing. And it's just an awesome thing that we're doing. It's waking people up. They're learning the song all over the world in their own language. They're learning to lift every voice and sing. They're picking up on it. And believe me, brothers and sisters, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's an awesome move of God. God's doing this. It ain't us. We just doing what he tells us, and it's working very well. And I just want to say thank you to all of you who participated, and particularly Sister Antoinette for reaching out like she has to all of us to get us involved in change and condition which our people are in. I just thank you, all of you and her. God bless
you, Antoinette.
I want to thank God for all of this, to even put us in the light. I got to thank Miss Antoinette for having me on her show. You're such a beautiful person. We talk, we call, I love it. Of course, Miss Kim, I love you to death, and thank God for you. That whole experience, I love my experience of never knowing this woman. But I was in that audience with her holding my fist up right with her. and Ray, it's such a pleasure to meet you and talk with you and learn about you and who you are and your family and all that. This is wonderful stuff. I mean, my son's going to love this. I'm going to send it to him right when I'm done. You know?
Yes. And it's a pleasure. There's something that I want to play. And I'm sure everyone can appreciate this. So I'm going to play this. Y'all listen to this now.
Okay.
I love being black. I love being called black. I love being an American. I love being a black American. But as a black man in this country, I think it's a shame that every few years we get a change of name. Since those first ships arrived here from Africa that came across the sea, there were already black men in this country who were free. And as for those who came over on those terrible boats, they were called nigger and slave and told what to do and how to behave. And then Master started tripping, doing his midnight tipping down to the slave shacks where he forced he and great-great-grandma to be together. And if great-great-grandpa protested, he got tarred and feathered. And at the same time, the black men in the country who were free were mating with the tribes like the Apache and the Cherokee. And as a result of all that, we're a parade of every shade. And in this late day and age, you can be sure there ain't too many of us in this country whose bloodline is pure. But according to a geological geographical genealogy study published in Time magazine, the black African people were the first on the scene. So for what it's worth, the black African people were the first on Earth, and through migration, our characteristics started to change and rearrange to adapt to whatever climate we migrated to. And that's how I became me, and you became you. So if we're going to go back, let's go all the way back. And if Adam was black and Eve was black, then that kind of makes it a natural fact that everybody in America is an African American. Everybody in Europe is an African European. Everybody in the Orient is an African Asian, and so on and so on. That is, if the origin of man is what we're going to go on. And if one drop of black blood makes you black like they say, then everybody's black anyway. So quit trying to change my identity. I'm already who I was meant to be. I'm a black American born and raised. And Brother James Brown wrote a wonderful phrase. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Because I'm proud to be black. And I ain't never lived in Africa. And because my great-great-granddaddy on my daddy's side did, don't mean I want to go back. Now, I have nothing against Africa. It's where some of the most beautiful places and people in the world are found. But I've been blessed to go a lot of places in this world. And if you ask me where I choose to live, I pick America, hands down. Now, by and by, we were called Negroes. And after a while, that name was banished. Anyway, Negro is just how you say black in Spanish. Then we were called colored. But shit, everybody's one color or another, and I think it's a shame that we hold that against each other. And it seems like we reverted back to a time when being called black was an insult, even if it was another black man who said that a fight would result, because we've been so brainwashed that black was wrong, so even the yellow niggas and the black niggas couldn't get along. But then came the 1960s. When we struggled and died to be called equal in black, and we walked with pride with our heads held high and our shoulders pushed back. And black was beautiful. But I guess that wasn't good enough. Because now here to come some other stuff. Who comes up with this shit anyway? Was it one or a group of niggas just sitting around one day? Feeling a little insecure again about being called black and decided that African-American sounded a little more exotic. Well, I think you were being a little more neurotic. It's that same mentality that got Amos and Andy put off the air because they were embarrassed about the way the characters spoke. And as a result of that action, a lot of wonderful black actors ended up broke. When we were just laughing and having fun about ourselves. So I say, fuck you if you can't take a joke. You didn't see the Beverly Hillbillies being protested by white folks. And if you think, that of course you think, that being called African-American sets all black people's minds at ease, since we affectionately call each other nigger, I affectionately say to you, nigger, please. I didn't get a chance to vote on who I'd like to be. Who gave you the right to make that decision for me? I ain't under your rule or in your dominion, and I'm entitled to my own opinion. Now, there are some African Americans here, but they recently moved here from places like Kenya, Ethiopia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Zaire. But not a brother whose family's lived in this country for generations, occupying space in all the locations, New York, Miami, L.A., Detroit, Chicago, even if he's wearing a dashiki and sporting an afro. And if you go to Africa in search of your race, you'll find out quick, you're not an African-American. You're just a black American in Africa taking up space. Why you keep trying to attach yourself to a continent where even if you got the chance to go and you went, most people there wouldn't even claim you as one of them, as a purebred daughter or son of them. Your heritage is right here now, no matter what you call yourself or what you say. And a lot of people died to make it that way. And if you think America's the leader on inequality and suffering and grieving, how come there's so many people coming and so few leaving? Rather than all this fine fault with America shit you promoting, if you want to change something, use your privilege. Get to the polls. Come as a voting. God knows we've earned the right to be called American Americans and be free at last. And rather than you moving forward with progress, you're dwelling in the past. We struggled too long. We've come too far. And to the folks that know who we were, let's be proud of who we are. We're the only people whose name is always a trend. When is this shit going to end? Look at all the different colors of our skin. Black is not our color, it's our core. It's what we've been living and fighting and dying for. But if you choose to be called African-American and that's your preference, then I give you that reference. But I know on this issue I don't stand alone on my own. And if I do, then let me be me. And I'd appreciate it if when you see me, you say, there goes a man who says it loud. I'm black. I'm black. I'm a black American, and I'm proud. Because I love being an American. And I love being black. I love being called black. Yeah, I said it. And I don't take it back.
Sister Kim Weston, the black national anthem.
Days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Well, okay. The first one, I Love Being Black, was by Smokey Robinson. And Lift Every Voice, of course, is our Miss Kim Weston.
Very pop.
Thank you, darling. God bless you.
Miss Kim.
Lift that way.
You.
Well, when you get a chance, I'm not bothering you tonight. I would like for you to play Exodus by yours truly. This land is mine.
Okay,
God,
I will do that. I will do that, Ms. Kim.
That's where we got to go. This land is mine. God gave this land to me because he put me here. I didn't put me here.
That's right. That is so true.
So true.
You're the first woman.
Yep.
And, well, that's the reason why all of us come together. All of us have to piece to the puzzle, and we're just all bringing our pieces to the puzzle to come together, like when Soulful was said, you know, take that fish and you put it together, and that's what we're doing, and you know, we're coming together, and you know, we're doing it, and one has their own way. Everyone has something that they're bringing to the table. And so we're bringing this to the table.
Yes.
I want to say this before I forget it, that September the 14th through the 17th, the Tuskegee Airmen's Convention is in... I forgot. I have to find it. And I'll tell you. But I just want to throw that out because that's doing something. And for what we've just come out of, we need to show some gratitude. Thankful, first of all, that our life was spared because you didn't know where it was coming from. How you going to fight something and you can't see it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So whoever's here this day, they've got something to be thankful for. But double victory. If you all would pull up that documentary for me, I won't have to say anything else about the drama. Because it's where the first protest was held that really meant something. And because of them and the integrity that they showed in Double Victory is the name of the documentary. Truthfulness.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm saying there should be a world Dota Day. Because they changed the war around.
Yeah.
Totally. And people don't understand that. They were losing 600 bombers a day, and each bomber had 10 to 15 men on it. A minimum of 600 a day. But the day that the Tuskegee Airmen started escorting the bombers, the whole thing changed. The whole thing changed. And because of what they did with the bombers, they were able to win the war. Because Hitler wasn't playing. And then when they got back home, after all of that, when you all see double victory, you understand what I'm talking about. When they got back home, they had a sign saying, "Colored this way." Yes, God, it was a beautiful show. I'm hoping I'm not missing it. But I'm talking about we need to get honor where honor is due.
Yes.
That's our responsibility because that's what we're thinking about.
Yes. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for being with us. Brother Vincent, do you have any closing remarks that you would like to give?
Yes, I do. And I said all my thank yous and all that good stuff, but once again, my honor to God, number one, and being blessed with Kim, you, Miss Antoinette, and Ray, Brother Way in this call, and all the listeners that's been listening and sharing feedback as well. To my people, my team of people that's been working with me, Sheila and Adina and Jeff Box and the Dream Boys and the whole nine yards. And I'm going to say, let's keep the faith. Let's keep the path, going the path that Ray is trying to pull together. Well, not trying, he's doing it. Well, I've got to change that word.
We're doing it.
And let's join forces and bringing unity back in the community and of our people, and then uplifting everyone and changing America, changing our lives back to where our future generation can live a better life instead of living crazy. That's the way right there.
Yes.
So that's my closing remark. Yeah.
To God be the glory.
Unity in the community.
Yes.
God be the glory for sure.
Yes. Brother Ray, do you have a closing remark?
Well,
Brother Ray?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
I
you hear
me?
You.
Yes, you're loud and clear.
Yeah, I thought I should that, but I just want to, again, thank you to everybody. And just pray that I appreciate you for what you're saying. And that's what we need to do. We need that attitude to come together. Doesn't, you know, it's the spirit we come together under, not under individuals. It's not about we. It's not about me. It's about we. It's about, you know, we've got to come together. There's no I in team, and we need to get through this. So let's get it on.
Right.
Perfect. Thank us.
Yep, exactly.
Ms. Kim, Ms. Kim, you want to give a closing remark?
To God be the glory.
Yes, ma'am. Brother Eddie, do you have a closing remark?
Yes. I'd just like to close out with, God's love is unconditional love. For us, it's better love together. Let's get this together, y'all. Let's do it. Peace and love.
Agape.
Yes. Sister Paris, would you like to give a closing remark?
I just give thanks to new family, gotten me this far. And I'm envisioning Miss Kim in between all the drums here in Arizona when that time comes in the stronghold. I'm envisioning that family. Miss Kim, you're on board. I see you there already. And once all of these drums come together and encircle you, the energy will shift, and those gates that should not have been open will be forever closed. I'm envisioning that. Thank us. Thank you, Sister Antoinette. Peace.
Thank you, Sister.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for being with us. And, you know, please join Brother Ray and I tomorrow for the organization of the Black community. And with that, I'd like to bid you all a good night. And, again, thank you for being with us. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, darling. God bless you.
Good night. Good night. God bless you.
Too.
each day. This man who spoke has much to learn. A man is born that way. And this is America. A man is born to walk the land in search of truth and trust, to pass the road from hand to hand and change the things he must. Oh, this is America, this land of mine. I stand behind the land of the free and the home of the brave. He's free to talk and wonder why, to say what's on his mind, to sleep beneath the quiet sky, unfettered, unconfined. Yes, this is America. A man is still a man in spite of anything he says, and for his freedom he will until it's here someday. Yes, this is